Welcome to episode 21 of Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie and I'll be bringing you the news, reviews, interviews and recommendations of the latest must-see theatre online. We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and friendly advice on where to find the best theatrical entertainment online. So it's been a confusing and unsettling time for everyone. The Monday after my last podcast, sadly, the West End theatres went dark. We knew that this was inevitable, as Broadway had already closed its doors to its audiences. I'd like to share the words of a freelance lighting director and laser technician called Miles Baldwin from his Facebook page. In theatre, we have a tradition. Whenever the theatre is empty, we are always sure to leave one light on, typically on a stand in the centre of the stage, and this light is known as the ghost light. There are many stories about its origin, but its meaning is unmistakable. It means that though the theatre is empty, we will return. So here's to us, the actors, the technicians, the directors, the carpenters, the designers, the dancers, the teachers, the students, the freelancers, those on tour, those at sea, the electricians, the stitchers, the makers, the stage managers, the artists. Many of us have taken big hits during this virus. Financial and emotional weights have come crashing down on the entire industry, and it is reduced to nothing but a bunch of ghost lights. But those ghost lights are temporary placeholders. They are a sign. We might be down now, but our passion, our creativity, our drive is still center stage. We'll be unplugging those ghost lights in no time. Until then, here's a ghost light to let the world know we will be back. So last week at 8pm on Thursday evening, I gave my biggest applause to the NHS and key workers alongside the rest of the country, where we showed our appreciation for all their hard work and dedication. And I believe that this is ongoing and we'll all be doing this same time, same place. And schools sadly closed, and as a teacher, I've been getting to grips with distance learning, and as a parent, homeschooling. I've learned several new applications and programs in a short space of time, and I even did an online Zoom improvisation class with 33 practitioners. Hilariously, I was held in a virtual waiting room for 5 minutes at 11 a.m. until I realised that all the other participants were American, consequently fast asleep, and that the class actually started at 3 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. So consequently, up and down the country, teachers have been setting loads of work and then trying to keep on top of their online marking. And I feel that the vast majority feel that if schools are closed for too long, the parents are going to find a vaccine before the scientists. So with my drama teacher's hat on, I just wanted to say a big shout out to my students, and that if there is a school 2020 leaver in your life, to give them loads of love. To them, this cancellation of school is not a holiday. It's wasted time that they won't get to spend with their friends in these last few months before they finish school. They're obviously anxious and realizing that they might not be able to walk the halls of school again for the last time or attend their leavers, dinner dance or prom. That they're sad that this prom that they've been waiting on all year or for the last few years has a chance of being cancelled. That they don't know when their real last day of school may be, and that may now have been and gone. That many of their friends may not have been in that day, and that the plans that they had eagerly awaited have been cancelled with regards to sports seasons and events and concerts and school productions that they've practiced and prepared for some for many years, and that this has really come quite short, and that they don't know what they're going to be assessed on for their GCSEs or their A-levels, that these have now been cancelled. but yet they're still revising for some kind of assessment, which is yet to be established by Ofqual and the government and the examination boards themselves. So indeed, everything that they've been working hard on for many, many years and everything that they know was incredibly important for this next phase of their life is also uncertain. Also, with many of my friends who are actors and technicians and directors, musicians, writers and comedians, their livelihood is at risk. And for many of them, they've auditioned for months and months to get into shows which have now sadly either come to an end or we don't know when they're going to start again. So I really want my podcast now to be a space for sharing creativity, where actors can share their experience with my drama students, and I can put these out to drama teachers across the country. I want this to be a podcast that's bursting full of positivity, and to that end I'm hoping to create a teaching theatre in quarantine series. So this will take things from the page to the stage. So I'm doing a trapped teaching tempest where I join forces with actors who are lending me their voices and skills and expertise in delivering Shakespeare monologues and duologues. I've already got some really experienced actors on board from the National Theatre, from the RSC and from the West End. And I've also got a monologue masterclass coming up with interviews from experienced actors. And also I'm putting it out there for drama school graduates who would have done their agent showcases. Bring me your work and your expertise, and we're going to do an How an Actor Prepares a Monologue workshop masterclass, which should benefit A-level students who prepare this as part of their course. And now onto the main show. Act 1, theatrical things that are being done, and Act 2, interviews for you. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Georgia Green, who's the director of the Mikveh Project at the Orange Tree Theatre, and Mark Holman, who was playing the part of James Morse in Pretty Woman at the Piccadilly Theatre. Act 1, theatrical things being done. So Friday was World Theatre Day, and it has been enlightening to see how resilient the acting community have been, with so much happening online to keep us entertained. So there's been a collaboration between Lambert Jackson Productions and the Theatre Cafe. They've amalgamated to present an initiative to keep actors in paid work during the theatre closures. They've released a schedule of online streamed concerts called Leave a Light On, where West End stars perform in online ticketed concerts. The stars include Jordan Luke Gage, who was in Anne Juliet, which I did a review in episode 7 of Theatre Audience Podcast, where I did a backstage interview with Aaron Blair Mangat, who plays the part of May. In these concerts, we've also got Steph Parry and Daniel Boyd. I did interviews with both of these during the rehearsals of Pirate Queen, and this was in episode 19. Amy Atkinson, who plays the part of Vivian in Pretty Woman, and Alice Fern, who I spoke to backstage at Come From Away in episode 17. Blake Patrick Anderson will also be performing in these online streamed concerts. He was in Be More Chill, which I reported on in episode 19. And also Marisha Wallace, who was in Waitress and Dreamgirls. So this initiative is to provide financial support for the performers involved, but also to provide entertainment for people in self-isolation. You can buy tickets for these online concerts for £7.50, and you can buy these on Instagram if you go to the pages of Lambert Jackson Productions or Theatre Cafe UK. Mm-hmm. Marisha Wallace, who came to fame in Dreamgirls and has recently been starring in Waitress, did a Waitress Live living room musical theatre karaoke night. She had over 4,000 viewers, and she said that this was a really positive experience, as sadly the show announced its UK closure around about the time of World Theatre Day. Here's a little excerpt, and you can find this in full on her Instagram page.
It's not simple to say the most days, but more than I gave them. It's not easy to know I'm not anything like I used to be, although it's true I was never different since until I still remember that girl. She's
and I thoroughly enjoyed West End Musical Brunch. This was live on Instagram, and this is going to be going out every Saturday. This was their first ever live stream, and this was presented by West End star Shanae Holmes. And she's been in Rent, Bridges of Madison County, and Jesus Christ Superstar. She opened with her rendition of the song Mama's Good to You from Chicago. Sinead then went on to introduce the guests of the show, including a dance captain who did a time warp challenge for the audiences to join in with. She was then joined by Marisha Wallace, who did a few songs, including I Will Survive and You're Gonna Love Me from the Dreamgirls. She then did a big shout out to the Theatre Audience podcast.
Hi, we've got a big shout out to the Theatre Audience podcast. Hey, how are we doing? Are we all good? Brilliant.
Sinead then went on to do a few more songs of her own for musical theatre, and this was such good fun and highly recommended for musical theatre lovers for next Saturday. Several West End musical theatre actors have been popping up on Instagram Live. So Miracle Chance, who was in Be More Chill from episode 19, and Kirsty Skivington, who was in And Juliet and Everyone's Talking About Jamie, have been doing some cooking and singing on Instagram Live. Also, Becky Locke, who was in Curtains, which I reviewed back in episode 10 with a backstage interview with Corey English, she's been reading Anne of Green Gables. We've also seen musicians. So there's an ex-pupil of mine who's a singer-songwriter called Jack Cullen. He's been doing a live stream tour round his home. So he's played this week the bathroom, the living room, the bottom of the garden, the kitchen conservatory, and the car. And he's been doing these performances on alternate nights. Here's a snippet of his performance. Also on Instagram Live this week has been Melanie LeBarre. She stars as the nurse in Anne Juliet. Her conversations have been really fun and quite enlightening. Here's some snippets.
Still working on it. Okay.
Melanie was incredibly entertaining and went on to answer everyone who was on Instagram Live's questions. So I'd asked her about monologue preparation, which you've just heard. She went on to talk about her first ever shows in the West End, and then this was quite funny.
In Manchester, fell flat on my face. I've also lost my skirt in Mary Poppins. I've fallen down in the West End more times than I care to remember. Luckily, a lot of it was before people could sneak phones into theatres, which I have a feeling about, but it's because I'm old, you know. It's cute and all of that when you see film things in theatres, but I'm an old lady. But yeah, it was before you could film things, so there is no video evidence of me falling down. I remember one time in Matilda, Mary Poppins, somebody came, talk about filming, right? It's so easy, people film things on their phones now. But somebody came, set up a tripod, and a whole, like, you know, one of those video cameras that were about this big. they sat down, they pull out things, put the camera on top, and was setting up to film the show. That set me.
Live streaming on Twitter this week has been a comedian called Colin Lego. He's also my colleague and the UK pun champion of last year, and he did a hilarious hour of comedy. Also, Aaron Blair Mangat, who you will remember me interviewing backstage at Anne Juliet in episode 7. He plays the part of May, and he recorded and sang this beautiful song on Twitter. And I'm going to leave this with you to play out Act 1.
Slow it down. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? Yeah, I'm afraid. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? There might have been a time when I would give myself away. Oh, once upon a time, I didn't give a damn. But now, here we are. What do you want from me? What do you want from me? Just don't give up. I'm working it out. Please don't give in. I won't let you down. It messed me up. Need a second to breathe. Just keep coming around. Hey, what do you want from me? What do you want from me? What do you want from me?
So it's the interval at Theatre Audience Podcast, and it's a very different format today, so I hope everyone's enjoying it. And I just wanted to pause to let you know that Theatre Audience Podcast will be going on Instagram Live on Thursday at 3 p.m. I will be hosting, so make yourself a pot of afternoon tea at 3 with me, Natalie, to talk about everything stagey. Act 2 interviews for you. So here's my interview with Georgia Green, the director of the Mikvah Project at the Orange Tree Theatre. Here's our conversation before the London theatres closed. So I'm chatting to Georgia Green, director of the Mikveh Project by Josh Azouz at the Orange Tree Theatre. Hello, Georgia.
Hello.
So tell me about this play.
Yeah, so the Mikveh Project is a two-hander about two people, a man and called Avi, who is in his 30s, is married to his wife, trying for a baby in a very sort of specific part of his life. And this younger guy, Etan, who's 17, slightly lost in what he wants, who he is. And they sort of accidentally intersect at a mikveh, which is a Jewish ritual bath used by often Orthodox men and women to purify before the Sabbath, as well as a bunch of other things. And they sort of have this unlikely intersection where they both sort of have things they need, and they kind of find it briefly in each other. But then it sort of starts to threaten their lives outside of the mikveh, and that's when it becomes slightly tricky.
Sounds interesting. How did you get involved in this project at the Orange Tree Theatre?
I was there for a year as one of their trainee directors on the MA programme, and it's the culmination of that year. There was a director's festival, which was a showing of four plays that were on for four nights each in a kind of double bill, and you could find your own play for that slot. It just had to adhere to certain stipulations, like it had to be under an hour and a half, it had to be less than three cast members in it, and I went on a mass sort of reading binge of plays and found this, and was so certain that this was absolutely the sort of one of the most amazing things I'd ever read, and was one of the most exciting things I'd ever discovered. So it was so obvious that that was the play that I really wanted to pursue for that slot. So then we did it for that, and it was sort of, there was a lot of audience momentum around it and a lot of excitement around the project, and it ended up getting picked up for the main season for a full run, which is really exciting.
Oh, fantastic. I remember seeing that on your Instagram and on Twitter. And actually, it's interesting you should say that, because you've got a 4-star Time Out review, and it says, alchemy that happens when you get the perfect combination of play and theatre. So, good choice.
Yep. Thank you.
And talk to me about the staging of this then, because, so you're doing it in the round?
Yeah, absolutely. It's in the round. And it's quite tricky to stage because the whole, all the action takes place around a mikveh, which is a pool of water. Wow. So you're both working in the round, which is a sort of a specificity in itself, and you're working in a functioning 3,000 litre full working pool. So it's been a real endeavour to do the project, and also such a testament to the Orange Tree to make that work. I think that's really unusual for a smaller space that doesn't necessarily have, you know, we're not at the National, it's not like we have all the resources, but the willingness to make that work is something really special.
Wow. And so it was Corey Shipp who did the set?
Yeah, Corey Shipp did the set.
And so how does this work in rehearsal then? How did you have the tiled pool throughout the process, or is this
there was sort of an understanding from the beginning that there was going to be a big jump. I think some projects, you know, there's going to be a big jump between rehearsals and tech. And this was, we always knew that was going to be one of those projects. So in rehearsal, we marked it with a paddling pool, like a sort of stand-up, primed paddling pool, really basic, rudimentary thing. And that was just a mark when you're in the pool and when you're out the pool. But it doesn't give much of an indication of what it will actually be like to be wet, to be, you know, getting down into a pool rather than like climbing over the edge of a stand-up paddling pool. It doesn't give an indication how difficult it will be changing, because there's so much they change. You have to be naked to get into a mikveh, so they have to frequently take off their clothes, get in, do the rest of the scene, get out, continue the scene, and get fully dressed without breaking the pace or the rhythm of the scene. So that was a big learning curve. But we put time aside for that in tech, so we knew that that was coming.
And quite something in the round in terms of your performers and, you know, sort of stage presence and awareness of...
Yeah, it's such an intimate space. And I think there's something about nudity in the round that's so different than nudity say, on an end on space where you have a side to hide yourself or to look to if there's something you don't want to reveal, but there's none of that in the round. Everything is revealed. But that's kind of the beauty of it as well, is that it's a really intimate way of storytelling.
Absolutely. And how did you cast this show?
Yeah, so the casting was interesting because we were very keen. It's by a Jewish writer. I'm a Jewish director. And, you know, with the questions of representation on stage and minority stories on stage, we were really keen to see as many Jewish actors or audition as possible. So we worked quite closely with the casting director to pull people in specifically, and then also to do open calls on certain platforms. So we saw a lot of people, which is really great. So we got a lot of people through the door, and then we settled on two brilliant actors.
And they've got some fabulous reviews out there. Financial Times,
yes.
4-star.
They're great.
Jewish Chronicle. And so who should come and see this show?
I would say, oddly, the show is specific in its setting, in terms of it's set in a Jewish world and with frequent references to that, but it also has a universality to it. It is, in essence, I think, a story of love that can't be pursued. And so it's very accessible to anyone. I mean, people were very moved by the story of all demographics and ages. That's why it's kind of beautiful. So I would say everyone should come see it, I guess.
Well, it's interesting. It sounds, you know, there's been a few plays that I've seen recently in very small, intimate spaces, predominantly at the Trafalgar Studio. So Coming Clean, and also at the King's Head, I saw The Southern Bells. And one of those plays, the way you describe it, has obviously it doesn't have a pool on stage, but it has sort of a similar resonance. And for me, it was more about the humanity of it and the relationships and, you know, I'm not a gay man and I could totally identify with the themes and issues and didn't feel sort of alienated
exactly.
in any way.
I mean, there's something very important about the specificity of how often do we see conversations around queerness and Judaism. Like, that is a rare conversation and one that does need to be pushed to the forefront. And so there is an attraction around that for certain audiences, but it is the universality of the story that makes it so magical and so funny. It's hilarious.
Funny.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. And what advice would that you then give to other young directors? Obviously, this is your debut.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm as game for advice as anyone. I think the one thing I feel I've learned is that it's not like it. I always used to think, you know, when you're rehearsing scratch nights or you're just like trying to put something together and you've got no resources, that at some point you'll get to a room that it will be like, this is how people work in professional situations. Like, it will be so different once you get into rooms that feel like they're higher up. But I feel like the reality of that is that no matter what level you're working at, whether you're working at like the Dorfman or wherever, it's still people sort of hanging out in a room. So it's about figuring out how you can bring your own authentic sort of self to that space, no matter where you are, and sort of take the pressure off a bit.
Nice.
So I don't know if that's advice, but that's what I've maybe
learnt
for myself. Yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, well, thank you so much for chatting to me, Georgia.
You're so welcome.
I'm so pleased that I got the opportunity to talk to Georgia Green about the Mikvah project, as sadly, due to the coronavirus, the production's run was cut short. It did, however, get some really strong reviews. In other news, the actors Patrick Stewart and Mark Holden have been reading a Shakespeare sonnet per day on social media to while away our time in isolation. Mark Holden was playing the part of James Morse in Pretty Woman at the Piccadilly Theatre. Here's our telephone conversation. So So I'm chatting to the actor Mark Holden, who was playing James Morse in Pretty Woman at the Piccadilly Theatre. Hi, Mark.
Hi there, Natalie. Hope you're well.
I'm very well, thank you, under the circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sadly, I didn't get the chance to get to Pretty Woman. I did have my ticket booked, and just tell me how it was going, because I saw all the social media, and it just looked absolutely stunning.
It was going extraordinarily well. Second preview, we broke the Piccadilly box office record for one night, or one day.
Wow.
Which, it's been totally sold out. I believe they were even selling standing room.
Oh, wow.
And we had our press night, went through that week, and then went into the second week, finished that, and then that was our last show on Saturday, Saturday the 14th, I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ever since, we went in for Monday, did the warm-up, and then one of the producers came around and said, sadly, we're following the advised guidelines that the government has given out about, theaters, pubs, restaurants, etc. So that was the last time we were in the theater. So,
Yeah, it was a peculiar day. I remember that literally the announcement had gone out, and it was quite late that evening. And literally, I think I had friends on the way to the theater that were still kind of braving it, and had to turn around and come back. It was a very reading.
It's very sad. Very sad. I mean, nothing like this has ever happened before. I mean, even I believe during wartime, theaters, pubs, and restaurants were still open. Following it guidelines, obviously, to bombings, etc. But everything being closed down, this is a new experience for all, I think.
Really peculiar. Yeah. But tell me about that character, James Morse, because I love the film Pretty Woman. Growing up as a teenager, it was something that I was watching all the time. And that character must have been quite fun to play.
Yeah, he is an old-style businessman, very wealthy now, billionaire, but he started on the ground floor, which in a certain way was similar to my father. My father's Nigerian. And his parents died at a very young age, and his older brother brought him up in Nigeria, put him into college, and he slowly went through the ranks. He joined the Navy and slowly went through the ranks right up until becoming an admiral, and then a vice president of Nigeria. So it was sort of based partially on my father. And James Morse is a kind man and cares a lot about his staff and employees. Which was a bit like my father. He cared a lot about people.
Mm.
And obviously when he meets Edward's trying to... James Morse's company, his shipbuilding company, has just lost a large contract with the government building government warships. So his grandson, David, has an idea of building cruise ships. But Edward Lewis comes in and says, I'd like to buy the company, basically, and sell it off in portions. And that's how people like Edward Lewis make their money.
Mm.
So after meeting Vivian Ward, who he brings to this very posh lounge, dinner, dining, dancing lounge at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel, I get to meet her and, think, oh, this is an interesting lady, that Edward brings along and get to dance with her. And slowly, she changes his attitude toward people and loving himself and starting to care for other people, and ends up caring about my company.
Mm.
So, and I'm proud because his father was a hard man, but cared about his employees, but at home was hard. And I know Edward and him had a bit of a tough relationship. And I know that, as James Morse, he knew that. So in the second act, when Edward decides to help me, and I say to him, I find it's hard to say without sounding condescending, but I'm proud of you. you know, and he was. He was proud of the way Edward had changed.
Mm.
So there's a lot to the character. There's a lot of backstory to the character. Two main scenes.
Yeah.
The first scene is meeting, he's meeting Edward and Vivian at this lounge.
Uh-huh.
And my character gets to dance with her, so I do get to shake a leg.
Nice.
Which, I've taken dance training, but I'm an actor that can dance a bit and sing a bit.
Nice.
You know, so it's a great opportunity for me to strut my stuff on the West End stage.
Lovely.
And then in the second act, when he decides, at my offices, he decides to help me.
Mm.
Instead of, you know, let my company crash and burn.
Fantastic.
But they're meaningful scenes. They're important scenes in the whole show, you know?
Yeah. They further the
gravitas.
Plot.
My character has a lot of gravitas.
Nice.
A lot of respect. He also reminds me a bit of James Earl Jones. I've worked with him in the past, and he's another man where you walk into a room and there is just that presence. He just fills the room with that gravitas.
Nice.
You know?
Fantastic. And is this character, James Morse, similar to any other characters that you've played before?
As I've gotten into my late 50s now, and I'm sort of graying here and there, I'm tending to land these characters with more gravitas. Just recently, I played a character, Martin Sinclair, in Riviera, who was a chief investigator from New York. And he, you know, he gets flown out to the south of France to help investigate the disappearance of one of the characters, and he's got that gravitas of knowledge.
Mm.
So I'm at, you know, in the era I'm in at the moment in my career, I'm starting to play these type of characters now. Whereas when I was younger, I played a lot of young cops, having been a cop. Yeah, and you know, a lot of sort of younger type characters. But because, you know, because I'm older now, and I have a whole swath of world experience with dealing with different things, being an ex-cop, an ex-private investigator, and I am also currently a trained close protection operative.
Oh,
so
nice.
I'm a bodyguard, and I've looked after a lot of CEOs and a lot of very high up, you know, people in high up places.
Wow.
So all this life experience for me has made me, has built me into what I am today as an actor.
So that'll be your next role then, as the in the bodyguard.
Well, it's not an African-American role, though. That's the thing.
But see, it could be.
I was in the bodyguard. I played Bill Devaney, the manager, is the African-American role in that production.
Yeah. And so, to keep yourself busy at the moment, I see you've been doing a Shakespeare sonnet a day on Instagram.
I have. Yeah, I didn't do one last night because I did a self-tape for something, so I didn't. I didn't do one last night, but I'll carry on. I might start doing them every other day, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's what's been keeping me going. You know, actually working on sonnets and obviously that monologue for Caliban. You asked me to do.
Yeah, thank you. And really lovely to hear about Pretty Woman and that role, James Morse. And I look forward to checking in, maybe not every day, but for your sonnets every other day. And good luck and safekeeping with everything that's going on at the moment.
So it was wonderful to have the opportunity to talk to Mark Holden about his time on Pretty Woman. And as you'll have heard at the end of that interview, he also recorded a Caliban from The Tempest monologue for me, which will appear in future podcast episodes where I'm doing a Trapped Teaching The Tempest for GCSE and A-level students, where I'm joining forces with actors who have lent me their voices and knowledge and skills. And also I'm doing a monologue masterclass where we look at how an actor prepares with regards to character development and vocal skills. Top tips for watching theatre online. So the National Theatre has some productions which are going to be streamed for free on YouTube. They're going to be putting something out every Thursday evening at 7 p.m. and then it will be available on demand for 7 days. So they're doing free full-length plays, Sally Cookson's Jane Eyre, Bryony Lavery's Treasure Island, Tamsin Gregg is in Twelfth Night, the BBC is showing Culture in Quarantine, and they are going to be putting on my favourite production, Wise Children, by Emma Rice's company, Wise Children. I'm waiting for a date, and I'll let you know the information on that on my Twitter and Facebook and Instagram pages. The Wind in the Willows West End production is also going to be available to stream online for free. What's on Stage have got a quiz, Can You Guess the West End Show, from a glimpse of its poster, and then there's going to be several other stage shows, musicals and operas that you're going to be able to watch online now for free, and the details are on What's on Stage. BBC is also going to broadcast and stream 6 Royal Shakespeare Company productions, and if you're lucky enough to have a Digital Theatre Plus subscription, as my students have access to, then you can watch many plays and productions. Also on there, there's information about practice and practitioners and theory and criticism and lots of really interesting interviews and conversations with creatives. I highly recommend Simon McBurney's A Disappearing Number. Now, this is a production by Complicité, and this, in my heart, is one of the most beautiful pieces of theatre that I have ever seen. It is my number one. I'm almost scared to watch it in case it doesn't match what I remember I saw in the theatre. But this was the winner of the Olivier Award for Best New Play in 2008. It tells the story of an extraordinary collaboration between a Cambridge professor and a self-taught mathematician. And this production, as I said, was devised by Complicité and directed by Simon McBurney. Also on there, I have seen Julius Caesar, which was the Donmar Warehouse production. Again, this was about 10 years or more ago. And this was the first installment of Phyllida Lloyd's groundbreaking all-female Shakespeare trilogy. And it saw Harriet Walter take on the role of Brutus. And this was set in an all-female prison. And it was a groundbreaking production that I remember taking A-level students to over a decade ago. So lots of things that one can watch. Also, we've got Andrew Lloyd Webber and Lin-Manuel Miranda, who have been having a sort of sing-off on social media. And also, I noticed today that Andrew Lloyd Webber had a sing-along a Sunday, Joseph, and he'd picked some best singing moments from different members of the public, but also Jason Donovan and several other very famous Josephs were on there as well. And now for my finale and curtain call. A thank you to Sinead Holmes, Aaron Blair Mangat, Jack Cullen and Marcia Wallace for their singing included in this episode. A huge thank you to Georgia Green and Mark Holden for our telephone interviews. In a future podcast, I will be bringing you my telephone interview with Sally Abbott, the writer of I Think We Are Alone, which was the recent Frantic Assembly 25th anniversary production. I've currently got several Royal Shakespeare Company, National Theatre and West End actors recording monologues and duologues for you for our future podcasts. And don't forget to tune in to Instagram Live on Thursday at 3 p.m. Make yourself a pot of afternoon tea and we'll talk about everything stagey. In the meantime, sending my best wishes to everyone worldwide this evening and hoping that everybody stays safe. Please tune in next time and recommend us to all your friends and family. Follow us on Spotify, Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. And do send us any recommendations of things you think we should see and review. If you've enjoyed the show, then please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and leave us a little review. Until next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.